Hey Steve, it's Melanie from Cranbrook. I'm just sitting down having a cup of coffee after what turned out to be a way harder bike ride than I set out on when I left my house today. It was drizzling, a little bit rainy, but it's better than hot. So I thought, I took my rain gear and I thought I'm going to be in the forest, it's going to be all good. And it was. I barely got rained on and it was really great. I had a great time. I saw some whitetail, pileated woodpecker, which is my all-time favorite, and the arnica in blossom and the Oregon grapes. I'm always amazed at the lack of wildlife I see when I'm in the backcountry. Surprising. But the bad news is that the climb was way harder than I thought, but I made it in kind of the time I thought, so that makes it okay. And the good news is that there are no vehicles driving around on the backcountry roads at all. So that makes for a nice, quiet, relaxing time. I ended up riding out in the rain. That got really cold really fast. I was glad I had taken my waterproof mitty things and that I stopped to put my rain pants on, which I probably should have done a couple minutes earlier. But I totally wore the wrong footwear and my foot was numb by the time I got back, but it was all good. It felt good to be on my bike. I haven't been on it a lot this year yet, so that felt really good, and I'm looking forward to participating in the Lost Elephant again, not as a competitor as usual.
Hello again, friends. Welcome to My Back 40 and the My Back 40 podcast. I'm your host, Steve O'Shaughnessy. Melanie, my good friend Melanie, sent me a voice message, and it's so good to hear your voice. And Melanie gets after it. People should know that Melanie gets after it, and it wouldn't be the first time that she's challenged herself in a bikepacking route in BC. She rode the BC Epic with her son Casey last year, and they made a movie about it. And you can find that if you go on over to YouTube. I'm actually on my phone at the same time. I had it up. I used to be good at computers. And it's, if you search for Casey Losath, Losat, last name spelled L-O-S-E-T-H, and search for BC Epic 2023 Casey, you'll probably find it that way. It's a great video diary of their ride on the BC Epic. And it just, the one thing that really resonated with me was just to be able to do something like that with your parent. Like, how special is that? Like, really, how awesome is that to be able to go on a bikepacking trip with your mom? Like, it's fucking beautiful is what that is. It's pretty awesome. Brings tears to my eyes. And if you haven't already listened to the podcast that I did with Melanie and her husband, Dan Losat, honoring Johann Georgiev, I would encourage you to do that. And that's episode number 72. So if you just Google My Back 40, 072, you're going to find it. And it's one of my most, it was a really difficult podcast to put together, honoring, the life of Johann, as many people have and continue to do, honor his life by continuing to get out there into the woods and ride our bikes and push our limits and commune with nature, which was kind of Johann speak to the animals, which was Johann's bag for sure. Anyone who followed the Bike Wanderer and all the videos that he put out, it was incredible. So 072 is one of my favorite and one of my most heartfelt emotional podcasts that I've put out. And I would encourage you, if you haven't listened to it, if you're new to My Back 40, welcome to the community. It's pretty awesome. Actually, I've got a great community here at My Back 40 in my backyard, and I couldn't be more pleased about that. But if you haven't listened to that podcast, please go back and listen to it. And I think you're really going to love it. It was a great way to remember a lost friend in the community. He was just a really beautiful person. And I don't need to go on about that. People who know Johann loved him, and he will be missed. So please go back and listen to that. So, Melanie, thanks for your voice message. If you want to send me a voice memo, and I haven't said this for a while, I don't think, whip out your device, record me something, and send it to myback40podcast@gmail.com. Or you can do what Melanie did, and she just DM'd me, and I can just suck it off of the digital internet and put it into analog form in my digital audio workstation. So you can send it that way. You can email it. You can, all sorts of different ways you can send it to me, but it doesn't matter what format, just send it. I can convert it. And I think it's a really good way to connect the community. So don't be afraid and send me a voice note. It was funny, as I'm building this podcast, I'm looking over at Timber, my bike packing rig, packed up for a trip that I'm hoping to leave on tomorrow. Just a shorty, about 180K-ish. So I'm just going to do an overnighter, leave Invermere, head up to Nipica, head down the Settlers Road to the Ravenshead, and then down to Canal Flats, and then up to Fairmont, and then I'm going to head up the Legacy Trail up beside West Side Road. I'm going to do that over the next couple days, and it's, you know what, to be honest, I'm a bit apprehensive because it's, I've done longer trips, but on the heels of having an arthritic hip that's going to be replaced in the fall, I'm wondering if, how much I'm going to suffer after I finish it. It's funny, when I get on the bike, it's, and I'm moving, once I warm up, it feels great. But it's just the aftermath that I have trouble with. People who don't know, I've mentioned that a couple podcasts ago. I kind of dip into it now, and it's a big deal. It's a big deal to me, and I'm really trying not to talk too much about it. But I'm 53. I'm wearing my shit out, and I'm getting a new hip. My left hip is in really bad shape. I've been dealing with quite a bit of pain, actually, ever since. I think it was exacerbated during the yo-yo and the AR summer, the summer I did those two events. And since then, and even on the Divide, I rode with a little bit of pain, but not as much pain as I've been dealing with lately. So I actually just heard from the surgeon the other day. And I was trying to think of a way to maybe share that story in some way, because to me, it's a big deal. It's a really big deal to me. The outcomes apparently are fantastic, which I'm excited about because I've just been dealing with it for so long, and it's really been affecting how I get out into the world and how I move around. I drive a lot more than I used to, just because it keeps the angry hip happy. So I've been dealing with a little bit of that. And mid-June, I have a consult. I have a feeling I'm going to go into surgery probably in the fall. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. I'm going to be going to Vernon, British Columbia, to get that surgery done. And I'm really hoping and praying that I'll come out the other side and be stronger than ever, because I've got a lot of shit I want to do, and it's really holding me back from doing that. So kind of sucks. But that is life. That is life, and we'll get through it. I wanted to read you something. For those of you not familiar, I've been reading Divide by Two Wheels, Racing a Mountain Bike Unsupported 2,700 Miles from Canada to Mexico on the Continental Divide by Michael J. Devitt. I finished it. I finished the book. It's in first draft. Michael is possibly listening to it right now. I've sent it to a couple people. Those of you who follow me at the $10 level on Patreon have been listening to me as I record it. And I've really tried to take as much care as possible to really edit each chapter. The one thing that was a real challenge in recording an audiobook, and this is my very first audiobook, and I think it's a road I want to go down. I want to read more books. I'm not sure how that works or how I'm going to do that, but it's something I really want to set my sights on because I really enjoy the process. And the people who have been listening to the book thus far are digging it. So I dig it too. And it's really fun for me. So Michael is in the process of listening to it now, as well as the full first draft, stitched together with opening credits, end credits, all that stuff. The idea is, once I get it, the stamp of approval from my vetters, that it is clean and good to go, then I'm going to put it out there for purchase. And it'd be a great way to support Michael, the author, and myself, Steve O'Shaughnessy, My Bike 40 podcast host. I think it's going to be an awesome companion to people who are riding the Divide this year. I'm hoping to have it out pretty soon. For me, it was an honor reading the book, especially having ridden the route, and then to read his words, and just takes me back, and I really love it. So I just thought, right now, if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs, just to give you a bit of a sample. Needing a big resupply for the next day, I jumped back on my bike after checking in and headed up the road a mile or so to what I thought was a convenience store and gas station. However, looking around, it was clear that this generic-looking store was anything but. It was a miniature Whole Foods-type place, complete with three brands of organic frozen burritos and an in-house bakery and deli with seating, as well as an impressive wine department. As I foolishly attempted to find non-cage-free, gluten-laden, high-fructose corn syrup containing normal Pop-Tarts, I stepped aside to let a young couple pass by me in the narrow aisle.
"He just wears that stuff to show off how fit he is,"
the guy said to his companion, referring to my bike kit. Normally, I would have just ignored his comment, but the TD makes you do things you would not normally do. Quote, "You may not believe this," I said, "but these clothes are actually very functional for riding a bike all day long, and none of us really like wearing them or the way they make us look." He nodded thoughtfully without making eye contact. The girl smiled a weak smile and then turned away to study the organic cereal offerings. I made a mental note to check myself out in the mirror when I got back to the inn. If this guy was threatened by my appearance, maybe I wasn't as disheveled looking as I thought. I did. I was. He was wrong. As the three of us reconnected for dinner on the spacious outdoor patio, a middle-aged man sitting with his wife at the table next to us stood and approached us. He held out his hand and introduced himself as Gene. He knew all about the Tour Divide. In fact, he was riding the last few sections of it himself, having been knocking off parts of the route for the past 5 years. He had been watching our progress as we approached Abiquiu.
"Steve is just a little ways back and should be along any minute now," he told us.
None of us had checked our phones recently, so we had lost track of the race flow. Just as Gene said that, three racers passed on the highway, then turned into the parking lot.
"The Stillwater Gang!" I shouted, as Jay came into view, just behind the others.
Soon Bobby and Seth appeared on the patio, and we did our best to convince them to stay there for the evening. Looking at our food, they cracked and got a room. Later they told us they cranked the air conditioning and lit the fireplace for a little ambiance. Soon Steve appeared on the patio, looking tired but in surprisingly good spirits. He joined us, and we all talked with Gene and his wife about life in general and bikepacking in particular. It almost made me feel like a normal human again. That feeling lasted until I once again looked in the mirror. I was anything but normal looking, and human was even a bit of a stretch. So that was basically the end of chapter 20. I kind of went random. I just kind of went through and found some stuff, and I just figured I would read that to you. That is the book, basically. And what's interesting about that small segment of what I just read is I cut into that 8 times while I was reading it. I didn't read all that. I couldn't read that in one flow. So part of the audiobook process is, reading it with flow and pause and, in fact, the empty space around the words is just like music, right? The empty space is just as important as when notes are being played. And so when you're reading a book, there's like certain pauses I was trying to be consistent with. And even breath sounds, I would remove breath sounds as I went along because it can be kind of distracting when you're hearing someone breathe all the time. So I would go through and breath sounds that could be removed would be removed. And sometimes I would have to reduce amplification of those. So there's a bunch of stuff going on for reading a book and I'm really, really proud of this project. I know it's taken a long time. People have been waiting a long time to get their hands on this thing. And it was just like, this thing is still a side hustle for me. It's my Canadian small business. This is something I'm trying to grow. I'm trying to grow my podcast, grow positive content that inspires people and share conversations with you all that inspire you, people to that we can learn from. Gain wisdom from. See what I mean? Like, I can't read a book. It took me forever to read that book and cutting into it constantly. I can barely say a sentence without fumbling over it. So anyways, I'm really proud of this project, and a great way to support the My Bike 40 podcast would be to pick yourself up a copy when it becomes available. And I will let you know when that happens. So the best way to know when it's going to happen is to follow My Bike 40 podcast on Instagram. And just check out your favorite listening platform. The podcast is kind of everywhere. It's places that I don't even put it. Aggregators just kind of suck it up and it's kind of everywhere. So if you Google My Back 40, you're going to find it. And you can stream it from my website, myback40.org. There's a store there, which is where I will put the book initially want to sell some copies there. And then I would like to move it up and hopefully Michael and I will be able to self-publish that to Audible and you'll be able to purchase it through Audible. So we'll see. I'm not sure how we're going to do it yet, but it's going to make a perfect accompaniment for the Tour Divide. I'm super proud of it. So keep your eyes peeled and I'd really appreciate it if you picked up a copy. It's not going to be that expensive, $15 or $20 for the audiobook. It's about a 5 hours, 15 minute read, I believe. So a good chunk of time. And I really dig it and I think you're going to dig it too. All right, let's get to the podcast. Drew Rainey, Rainy Days at R-A-N-E-Y-D-A-Y-S-S. Drew reached out to me about a month ago, I guess now, and he wanted to connect and have a podcast together to talk about what he's doing in California. And I'm going to tell you about it right now. So Drew recently helped put on a bikepacking event in the Los Padres National Forest in California, which he completed on a single speed, which is amazing. Additionally, he raised $1,000 for his elementary school to give away bikes and start a comprehensive learn to ride program for ages 4 to 6. As the school's PE teacher, he strives to instill a healthy lifestyle in his 500 plus students by challenging himself through bikepacking ultra events. So we had a great conversation and this kids on bikes is super special to me. And this kind of, you know, what he's doing is basically inspiring children, getting kids on bikes of all ages, who haven't learned to ride a bike or whose families can't afford to give them a bike. And there's this great organization called All Kids Bike. And you head on over to allkidsbike.org. You'll be able to collect some information about it. But bike riding is key developmental milestone for children. And they're on a mission to teach every child in America how to ride a bike in kindergarten PE class. So there's this great program where a school can invest in bikes that they can teach kids to ride. And then I believe they give a couple away. So we had a great conversation. It's not just about allkidsbike.org. It's just about riding bikes, pushing limits, inspiring young people to get on bikes. And I really think you're going to dig this podcast. So without further delay, I bring you Drew Rainey. Hey, Drew.
Hey. All right. I have borrowed some AirPods, so I'm going to work on getting those going.
Yeah, do it up. Take your time.
Perfect. Yeah, you were on it. I was sending you some talking points too.
Oh, did I call too early? I should have checked first.
Oh, you're sorry. Good.
All right. Let's hear it.
All right, I can hear you now. What were you saying?
Oh, yeah, they sound pretty good. I was just saying that nowadays it seems like audio video quality is so good. Like,
yeah.
I was talking to, I just put that podcast out. Well, it'll go out tomorrow morning with Mike Dion, and he was just talking about filming Ride the Divide with the stuff that they had, right? And now we carry 4K cameras around in our pockets, right?
Mike Dion was the author of Divide by Two Wheels, the audiobook you were reading?
No, that's Michael Devitt.
Okay, mixing up my Michaels.
Mike Dion is the director of Ride the Divide, that movie that's going to be coming out, re-released on June 15th.
Okay.
Have you not seen it?
I've seen the original one.
Yeah.
I'm mixing up my mics there. Are they adding any content to it? Or is it going to be just like a re-release?
Yeah, no, he said they had like, how many hours? Like 100 hours of footage that they had to go through, wanted to go through and reincorporate. So, yeah, I think it's going to be great. It's going to be interesting to see what people, because I almost finished it. I was just watching it the last couple of days, just working my way through it. And it'll be interesting to watch the new one to see how they maybe change the storylines or bolster the storylines with, you know, more information or more anecdotes.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how it all goes. Yeah.
I know it inspires a lot of people to Ride the Divide. I definitely have some questions for you on that, 'cause that's been on my radar. Yeah. Not that I necessarily am planning on doing it anytime soon, but I'm on that teaching schedule. So my work availability, you know, that second week in June actually is, you know, something I might aim for in the next couple of years.
Man, you should do it.
I'd like to.
Yeah.
I was going to say, one of my questions for you is going to be like, at what point did you know that you were ready? Like what, were you just at a experience level? You're like, yeah, I've done all these other smaller events. Like, it's just time to take that bigger leap and take on that month long challenge.
I think so. I didn't do it with any intention. And now I feel like I'm on the podcast. I'm the guest.
Well, no, that's good. I don't want to be the one talking the whole time. I like to, same thing with teaching. I don't want to be the one talking the whole time. I want to be interactive.
Like, I don't think I ever intentionally was stepping up my distances every year that I was doing stuff, but you know, they started, you know, around the 500K and then 700K and then 1000K. And then after the yo-yo, after I did the summer and I did the yo-yo and I did the AR in one summer, for me to be able to do two bikepacking events physically was a key. It's like, okay, I think I'm strong enough probably to do it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that the yo-yo is almost half the distance. So I was like, well, I've done half of it, like 2200 K, you know, I guess not quite half, but I was used to the day to day, like just the day after day after day. And the little events that these great organizers put on, a lot of times, I mean, in the Columbia Valley or over in the other side of the Rockies, they're difficult. They're really challenging. Mm-hmm. There's like bushwhack and there's like steep climbs and hike a bike and snow and all that. So all these little really punchy events set you up for the divide, because really the divide's not technically that difficult at all. It's just fucking far, and it's you know,
for sure.
I just knew after that point, I think I was like, I can do this. I'm gonna do this.
I know everything you just described, like, you know, you don't think about it, because sometimes you think it's California where we're based. It's like, oh, sunny, warm, everything, which it can be. But then you have these massive mountain ranges that are all around us. So in our what I call like our local little event, the one I actually was the tour route organizer on, we had all that, the bushwhack, the boulder climbing, snow, and all this adversity. And I was like, wait a minute, I thought I was marketing this as the easier route. And I'm like, geez. And so when it took me, you know, 3 days and change, or like pretty much up to 3 days finishing at midnight, I was like, oh, feel bad for everyone else that what I just dragged them through. But with that being said, it's like we do advertise it as a tough ride, so I can definitely get into it. Well, I don't know if you're already recording or anything like that, but we can
right off the jump. Top.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
I don't want to miss a beat.
So, like, I know. I'll definitely be going into. I'll talk a little bit about like what we have going here for us in California, and I'll give people like a little bit of a background. So I'm based out of. First off, name wise,
yes. Drew Wait, Rainey. Stop. Let's pause for a second.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah. You do. You are the perfect guest. You just like. So let's just slow it down a little bit. And, cause we're going to get to all that stuff. And, but yeah, you were getting into what I wanted to get into. It was like, so what's your backstory? You're a phys ed teacher now. What are some of the events that in your life that kind of led you to that path?
Yeah. That's a perfect, starting question, because I was just at a college and career fair that my wife was putting on. She's at the middle school. She's a counselor at the middle school. And so I had gone there and I described it as the kids were asking, well, what made you want to be a PE teacher? And I described it as, you know, that one kid that tried way too hard in PE class and always made a giant competition. I said, yeah, that was me. I was that kid. So I never really wanted to stop playing. Right. Being the one that now facilitates it and putting on all these games and sports, it doesn't really feel like working for me. It's important to note that I'm an elementary PE teacher, which is, they don't have everywhere, especially in my area. There's not too many in my area. I have the lucky job of getting to work with kindergarten up to fifth grade. I didn't start as that, but I found myself in that role when there was some shifting around the district. All of a sudden, I was going to be at an elementary school. And in a way I was like, oh God, here we go. I was scared a little bit. I was like, whoa, like kindergarten, 5-year-olds, like how are you going to get them to do anything? Like, I'm just so used to this. I thought I was going to be a high school tennis coach.
Is that, wait, stop. Is that kind of where you were? Were you kind of teach more with high school kids?
So I was working with middle school and high school. Middle I was coaching high school tennis.
That would be a shift for sure.
Luckily it wasn't like jumping into it completely blind, because I'd worked with younger students just on the tennis courts, like, you know, your first job out of high school. who was a tennis coach at a country club, working with the little kids. And then you'd get a couple more years. You'd start to work with the older kids, the better kids. But it was like, oh, here we go. And then once I realized how fun the career was and how much fun you could have with it versus, and also like still make a decent living, we get paid pretty well in, you know, like in California, teachers do make a pretty good wage. And now you couple that with the fact that I teach in a rural area, it can be pretty competitive pay as well. So with all the things that I have added on, just do with my, you know, base pay plus all the extra things, it's a pretty good gig, in my opinion, with opportunity for, you know, like, hey, we have 2 weeks off for winter break, week off here for spring break, things like that. You can get out and have that little micro adventure and not have to take time off work, which I absolutely love that flexibility.
And I think what's important to note too is, you know, you went from teaching older kids to these younger kids. You're actually, in their formative years of little athletes. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's important because, you know, raising two kids on my own, one kid's super athletic and the other kid is just a super slow mover and just really slow to adopt and to change and to try and to push the limits. And I can't imagine being in a room with a bunch of little kids, you know, of throughout that whole spectrum of you've got the little athletes and the kids who are afraid to do a somersault, you know, kind of thing. Right. Yeah. So they're formative years and it's for you, it's about building their confidence. Right. And, and making it fun. And yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So even with that, like there's at times when I have 90 first graders, 80 first graders in one room, it's like, well, here we go. You know, that doesn't happen all the time, but it's okay, let's get focused. And there's norms you have to set early so that you can stay on track. But like you said, with the formative years,
sounds like a nightmare.
it was at first, but once you kind of get the hang of it, and I'm really good with names. I mean, I have about 550 students. I would say I know 450 names. Crazy. It's just the really younger ones that don't talk as much, or I've only had for a little bit. And when I say that, and you start to get to know little things about them, you start to learn, well, oh yeah, they play baseball in spring, or this girl will play soccer in winter. I get them year after year. It's not like I'm getting a new group. So if I was a high school teacher and I would teach 9th or 10th grade, you get that one group of students and then you send them on to the next grade or they age out of PE. The cool thing about my gig is when they get to school as a kindergartner, I'm going to have them year after year after year. So this current group of 5th graders, we're about to send to middle school in 6th grade, which they'll go to my wife's school. I've had them for 3 years now, and I'm going to be really sad to see them go because I've worked with them on a lot of extra programs, and you really get to know the students and you can mess around with them. You know, little things about them, and it really does make for a fun time, and you don't have to battle for behavior already. I mean, like I have an aide that works with me that pretty much knows, it's a small town that we service. She pretty much knows every family, every grandparent, every mom, and she'll just tell a kid straight up, like, hey, if you want to continue that, I'll call your mom right now. And the whole class is like, whoa. And she will. I've seen her do it.
Yeah.
So it's like, whoa. So you got that small town feel. I mean, the town that we work for, in the very heavy agricultural based town of about 25,000 people, it really does retain that small town feel. And she's been doing it so long that you start to get that multi-generation coming through the school system. So she'll get this new student and she's like, hey, what's your last name? She'll know them already. So yeah, it's like, oh, I had your mom 15 years ago. So
that's cool. Crazy. Yeah. Small town vibe. That's cool though. Mm-hmm. I think that the nice part about living in a small community like that, like Invermere is like 3,500 people, maybe 4,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That explodes to like, you know, 20,000-30,000 people, because you know we're a lake destination in the summer and skiing and whatnot.
Yeah.
But you know, to go into the grocery store and that I haven't been into a long time, like, oh, Steve, I haven't seen you for a really long time. What's going on? You know, it's cool. Yeah. And on the flip side, there's no anonymity. Like you can't get away with anything.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, everyone sees you for everything.
How long you been riding bikes?
you know, that was something we always did as a kid. We always had a bike growing up, and we had this great bike path in Bakersfield, which is home for me, where I'm based right now. But I would say more seriously, just out of high school, leaving tennis, being a pretty competitive athlete, I was looking for something that I could do. And I didn't want to give this, I didn't want to give up the feeling of, oh, you're an athlete. So I did what any person does. I had my midlife crisis early, picked up triathlon.
How old are you?
I'm 27 now.
Midlife crisis, dude.
Yeah,
come
I had
on.
My midlife crisis early. Yeah. No, but I had, you know, there's a big thing with identity for me where you leave high school and you're like, whoa, what are you going to do? And I was in community college, and, but I was really struggling with the fact that, like, something had worked on from age 5 to 18, competing at a somewhat high level, at least locally, was pretty much done. I mean, I was at the level where I could play college tennis, maybe at the community college level, or it wouldn't be NCAA or anything like that, but it was something I could have done. But the school I attended did not have a tennis team. So I just had this like, oh, I need to be an athlete. I need to push myself, picked up a road bike, started running. And then the last thing to do is just go to the local pool at the tennis club and teach yourself how to swim off YouTube videos. So I didn't have a background in any of it, didn't have a running background, biking background, or swimming background, but instead was just fueled by the competitiveness that I need to get in there and compete. So what made it really cool was at age 18 and 19, there wasn't many kids or younger adults doing longer distance triathlon. I raced at the Olympic level distance or international distance. So you're doing your 1 mile swim, 25 mile bike, 10K run. And almost every single race I showed up to, there was either one or two other people. I was winning age groups in all of them. And that to me, or you're someone that's searching for that competitive drive, it fueled a lot right there. So that was like the first origins of starting to push myself, time trial, doing like the local time trials around here. Everything was road, did probably 15,000 miles on the road before I even considered going to the dirt.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's a lot of road.
I know. Yeah. But I mean, it expanded, you know, fighting injuries and things like that from running. I jumped into, ended up going to school in the Bay Area at San Jose, racing for the college team. And that's when I at least, started to dabble in working in bike shops. You know, I always worked a little bit in college, so that was my opportunity to start getting into bike shop work, and that opened a lot of doors too.
Nice. And so what kind of things were you, so you're a road racer, you raced road in college?
Yeah. I mean, it was like
regionally or.
Yeah, we would, it was called like Western Cycling something conference. And it had a lot of the big hitter schools in California competing, like your Cal Berkeley, Stanford, Cal Poly, all these, UCs or Cal States, which is just like the state level schools, they had some pretty strong teams. I mean, I only raced in the lower levels, which would, you know, you'd call Cat 5 or they would call it Cat D. But I mean, you'd stick around and watch these guys flying. They're holding well above 20 miles per hour average on these 80 mile road races. And it's like, whoa, there's a whole nother level to this. And if you could say the same thing about going up to, you know, continental teams or world tour riders, they're just on an incomprehensible level. So, but it was exposure. It was like, well, here's another thing to, you know, do in cycling, and it wasn't triathlon. And that was, it was just like a formative time. Once again, it's like, oh, here's this aspect, you know, you get to do all these different parts of riding. So yeah,
it's cool. You're talking about, you know, the level of performance at the at the front end of the pack. You know, I kind of rabbit holed down a whole bunch of gravel races. You know, I'm not a huge, I don't follow it. I really don't. But the level of intensity at the front of that pack is mind blowing. And it's you know, it's one thing to do that on the road, right, where things are fairly smooth. You know, it's but to do that kind of to have that kind of output in the gravel and on the washboard and loose, and then still riding in packs, still riding in pelotons, and it's so impressive to me, like super impressive, like the level of fitness these athletes have, it's crazy. men and women. It's bananas.
Yeah. I mean, I went to pretty much like Lycra wearing to power meter on all these sorts of things. And then had this sports injury come on, and it really was overuse to, you know, as a PE major, we were in three or four PE classes at one time. So I was going from racing in the road, running on off days, running to a soccer field to do a soccer class, and came home from college that summer, just laid completely numb. And I was like, well, what do I do now? Like, wasn't getting better. Did your physical therapy, rest, ice compression, everything like that. And it just was not getting better to the point where my leg would just swell up after working a full day at the bike shop. So, somewhere around there. And do you know Ultra Romance, Ronnie Romance, do you know of him? Okay. So he's,
Probably embarrassing myself.
Yeah. Not knowing who that well, is. He's like, he's definitely a figurehead in the bikepacking community, but more so like, he's, an alt rider. So I have my, he was sponsored by Specialized, but not for road racing or anything, but he was like kind of pushing, some of their like touring lines when they had it. I watched a video. I remember sitting on the couch just, you know, I can't ride. What am I going to do? All I did that summer was swim, but sitting on the couch and looking at, touring bicycles, like off-road bikes, like not even mountain biking, but look at all this sector that you can do. And you could ride from, Vancouver, Canada, all the way down to San Diego, and started to dabble in like the Adventure Cycling Association routes. And all of a sudden the wheel started turning. I was like, whoa. Like, look at this. There's a whole world of things other than racing. And I never considered it after those 15,000 miles. All of a sudden it was like, well, I could graduate college and I could do Seattle all the way down and ride back home all on the Pacific Coast Highway if I wanted to. And it never really occurred to me like to do something outside of the competitive realm. And I realized, oh, this is going to be really enjoyable. That led to picking up like an off-road touring bike, a Trek, at the Trek shop I worked at that summer. And even though I had surgery and things derailed a lot right there, the benefit to that was all of a sudden I had a bike that was capable of going in the dirt. So
what was your sports injury? We kind of glossed over that. What was the deal?
Yeah. It was, it's called compartment syndrome is a short one. One that I dealt with was, chronic exertional compartment syndrome. So compartment syndrome you would see in trauma events like car crash, an athlete that might have been hit by a baseball in a certain compartment of the leg, and that leg's divided up into like four compartments. In that trauma, say like in a car accident, when that tissue or muscle, soft tissue, gets compressed, it can swell. And in emergency events, what they have to do is a medical professionals would open your leg up to allow that swelling to subside, because basically it swells so much that tissue damage starts to occur. Now mine was brought on by, I couldn't pinpoint it down to like a, sorry, I got a really happy lab that's just running around. She's just having a fun time. I couldn't pinpoint down why it happened. I just kind of chalk it up to, you know, I was doing way too much on no rest. But in my case, the surgery to fix that was, they tried cortisone shots. They tried more physical therapy, but after a year I gave in and said like, well, let's just try the surgery. Went down to Los Angeles, where apparently it's like the Dodgers team sports doctor or something. So ended up going through like got a referral and went to this high-end medical facility, and they did nerve decompression, and then they incised the fascia of the outer layer of the muscle. So they had to cut open a good lower part of my leg, and then it was probably a 6 months of rest before I even rode again. So all in all, I probably spent a year off the bike, which is really hard for me, someone that's like basically addicted to exercise at the time. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of people struggle with that with injury. Like,
Yeah. But it taught me a lot too. It's like, okay, well, if you're not listening to your body, look at the consequences here. Like if you're not listening to those aches and pains and addressing them, like I love the, you were talking about like dynamic cyclists. I got onto dynamic cyclists too.
Nice.
And then I was like, well, I can't just, if I just jump back into things and go the same route, I mean, it could be the other leg next time. So I went in and really wanted to address and strengthen and have the flexibility to remain injury free.
You know, going back to your first the Tour Divide question at the start, I was pretty much off the couch when I rode because I was dealing with, and I'm still, well, I'm not going to get into it because I've already mentioned it in the last podcast.
Yeah.
I'm getting a new hip and that was bothering me then. Like that was bothering me 2 years ago. And so all I did was stretching mobility for like definitely 3 months solid. And then I rode
it.
And someone else asked me once another thing, like, what, you know, I think that you're already a cyclist. You already know how to ride a bike. You know that, you know that part, you know how to ride far already. We're going to get to that. You already know that.
Yeah.
But I think having just the strength and the power in your body, like just being strong to be able to pick your bike up and roll it up Coco Klain's pass, like, you know, to be able, cause there's a bunch of sections where you're going to be pushing your bike and it's steep and the more strength you have and mobility in your body. Cause I hear about people riding and I mean, if you're going to finish it in 2 weeks, yeah, you got to train, you got to do the volume, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, honestly, if you're already riding a bike, you're riding a few days a week, you just have to get your distance up and just go into it strong. So,
being
off the bike for 6 months, or a year. Yeah. That'd be tough. Cause you know, what did you identify with then? Like, what did you do to keep occupied?
At the time it was swimming and, it was low impact, but even that I had to be a little mindful of the kicking. Cause that seemed to have a little bit of an irritant, I questioned whether I was making things worse. But the other thing I did with my partner, my wife was, we did a lot of strength work, mostly upper body, but I was still doing, squats and deadlifts at the time. And I was trying to apply my degree at the time, which we were doing these classes. The funny part was right after surgery, my wife, her dad is actually a physical therapist, owns his practice. And so I ended up going to see him through my recovery. And this is early on the dating. And so he would bring me in there and he would ask me and quiz me. He's like, all right, well, what muscles are we using right now? What is your function?
Nice.
So it was like, okay, so I'm doing these senior level anatomy classes. And then I have my future wife's dad quizzing me like, well, what's this one? Extremely knowledgeable in his craft. And it was really lucky to get to utilize his skills to get recovered. So he was always keeping the goal in mind that I wanted to regain full mobility into my riding, but recommended. I meant, there is, or can be an issue in reoccurrence with compartment syndrome if I ran again. So with that being said, I kind of said goodbye to triathlon and started to dabble into the dirt a lot more, like, all the different ways you can do that. So,
when was your first bikepacking event?
So what the hard part was, I had a bikepacking ride. I had a Surly Krampus years ago. And I just could not find the crew to ride with. Anything that I would have the bags, I had, the legs for it. I just didn't have that motivation to maybe make that solo trip by myself or, different fears or barriers like that. And I ended up finding this group basically at the start of COVID. And it was a local adventure based shop, Grizzly Cycles, here in Bakersfield. And they would host overnighters or, a lot of accessible trips. And that's kind of what it took to get on that first trip. There was, a group of like-minded people that, it's definitely more on the casual side, like stop for snack style, no drop, everything like that. But the owner, Kevin, would invite anyone that wanted to come and put out a route, put out a common camping spot, and everyone would show up. I mean, road bikes, gravel bikes, flat bars, everything, mountain bikes. People would just strap their bags on their camping gear and you get all sorts of setups. And that was pretty much the origin of, bikepacking. The first trip was, I think I remember I brought a almost a full hiking pack that just killed my back, and we just
and your went ass up the, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean everything. And I remember I was on my first mountain bike was a Kona Hanzo Steel ST, the same bike that the owner had, and I just said, hey. I want a mountain bike. I've never mountain biked before. This is the start of COVID 2020. And I want to eventually be able to bike pack on it. And he threw an order down the next week. You couldn't get a bike anymore. So it showed up like 3 days later and I was like, sweet, I'm going to mountain bike everywhere. And it couldn't have been better timing. I mean, schools up here effectively shut down and we didn't even have, It was a lot of time on our hands. But to kind of go back to your question on that, I took that bike and the first real event I did was one I'll talk about later too, was our local Tour de los Padres. Tour de los Padres is like a challenging, could be categorized as an overnighter. It's more often a 3-day trip where we it's almost like in a way, it's a downhill event where you're starting at higher elevation. You kind of go down to the ocean, but there's, you know, you're a couple mountains in the way. And in 2022 in, April, so 2 years had passed since I picked up that bike. I got a friend together and said, hey, like I found out about this, event. Some buddies had done it, but I ended up wasn't able to do it the previous year. And I was like, this is the year we got to do this event. And, we pretty much like jumped in on it and showed up. Like all of a sudden we got to the Grand Depart start and looked around. Everyone had more stuff than us. We were like the only X-seed out racers, like looking type people. And a lot of people came up to me and were like, is that all you're bringing? You don't have a seat pack? And I was like, well, trying to keep it light, but you know, you get these polar opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, I go from the first trip to taking all this junk, all this crap I didn't need. I was like, what was I doing? And then you kind of start, you learn a little bit more and
you're learning. That's what you're doing, right? You have to, yeah.
So the story for this Tour de los Padres, the first year was, I had a strong riding partner him and his family had this survival school. They would take people out and teach them like survival skills in the wild. So it was probably the best person you could take out in the backcountry. And he was a strong mountain biker, had similar setups, hardtails with bigger tires. And we went out and, you know, we were covering ground. It was like we were racing, but touring at the same time. Like we're doing covering ground. I kept pulling up like the tracker. I was like, hey, all right, we're in like seventh right now. Let's catch more people. And it was just like this silly little thing. I was like, but then we would get to a burger joint and just chow down for like an hour. So it was like, we were like looking forward to it. Those were the things that was like, okay, well, let's get some real food in us. And we were covering ground when we did with our lighter setups. But at the same time, it was like, are we really racing? Like we're taking like a couple of hours here and there. So we did a good push on that first day. We covered 85 miles and about 8,500 feet of climbing on the first day. So I can't really convert it to kilometers right now, but like, 85 miles, just under.
It's like 1.6. Yeah,
something like that. And just under like 3,000 meters. But when we had the hard part that night was it was around like 8 or 9 o'clock. There was a campfire set up and a big chunk of this, like maybe the 30 people that were participating were all camping together. And I remember looking at him and I said like, hey, we're like, let's get ahead of these guys.
Right.
Let's get ahead of these guys. Yeah. And it was this big hike-a-bike push. I had done it the week before, stabbed the yucca plant with my hand. My hand blew up and I was taking antibiotics when we did this actual event. But I told him, I was like, hey, we're going to get this hike-a-bike section done now, about an hour and a half hike-a-bike. And if we do, we'll be set up really well. Like, this is going to, we'll get ahead. We'll be in striking distance of the finish line. Like, let's do this push tonight. And I remember him looking at me. He's like, all right, let's go. But we had to leave the warmth of the campfire and all these people just laughing around. I was like, shoot, like, it really, you know, later that night, you're like, shoot, we could have just stayed there and slept and eaten food. Like, all the niceness of everything, all the camaraderie of the comfort, crowd was there.
The comfort. Yeah, it's hard to leave comfort. Yeah.
But it we learned a lot too. So we pushed out and we got up to camp and we really did have ourselves like a good plan for day two. And we're kind of cruising around day two, had gotten up early, we're covering ground once again, you know, talking to people out there. So somewhere around day two, middle of the day, I remember the friend, Steven, he turns to me and he's like, well, good thing we can, you know, good thing, like if we want to, we can spend another night out here. And I kind of turned to him and I said, hey, just to give you a heads up, our ride's already waiting for us at the beach. So my wife and her mom had already left to go pick us up. And I didn't really say that to him, but I got, he had given me a trail name after that. So I was like, hey, you know, we got to finish tonight, like whatever it takes, we're going to finish tonight. And so from that, he had given me the trail name Captain Ahab from Moby Dick, because I was just so focused on this, like, we got to finish. We got to get there. Like, come on, eat your goo. Let's go. Like, come on. And in between that, even though I didn't have service, I think my dad was messaging me on my inReach, which I'm like, oh, is this support or no? I'm like, it was just a message. he said, yeah, I know. I'm like, well, in my head, I'm like, well, I got to follow the rules. Like, I got to do this. I don't want to get relegated. He had messaged me. He's like, you are 30 minutes behind fourth place right now. And I was like, well, shoot, we're getting fourth place. And we chased this guy down. And he actually, super cool dude. But every time we would run into this rider, he would always ask us to use this tool. He didn't have a Torx key or something, and he was on a Salsa Cutthroat. I think part of his, like, the carbon, like the armor or whatever on the down tube, his kept coming loose, or he kept having these things come loose. So every time we would meet up with him, we would let him borrow this Torx key, and he would fix it up, and we'd talk. We'd ride for a little bit, and at some point I just said, hey, Steven, like, he's on a gravel bike. We're on our mountain bikes. It's rocky right now. This is like, let's just go. Yeah. And so it's like, we said bye to him and we made a big push, ended up finishing the event. And I was like, oh, we'll finish in the daytime. Well, we're going to roll up on the beach. We're going to see the pier in Santa Barbara, California. It's a beautiful, really nice town. And we finished about like 10:45 at night with him limping in. He had slashed a sidewall on the rocky descent. But that was like the start of ultra distance events, like, ooh, like, you know, having never done anything really more than like 80 or 90 miles, we just pulled out like a 170 mile trip with 16,000 feet of climbing. It was a big day. It was two back-to-back 85 mile, 8,000 foot days. And that really, it brought the bar up and started to see, like, you know, I remember even thinking like, shoot, I mean, if I had to do a third day of the same distance, I felt like I could have done it. So that started to raise the bar for what we, or at least personally, what I felt my limits were.
So yeah. As a phys ed teacher teaching these young kids, do you share stories of that with them? Like about perseverance and don't give up and, you know, your capability and mastery and stuff like that?
Yeah. So there's like two parts of that I'll get into on this was the... First thing was the participants of this event, it's a free bikepacking event, you really only have to pay like $20 if you want to be tracked, was they wanted you to raise money for like a cause. Like it was encouraged for participants to pick a cause that they felt like they were passionate about. And at the same time, I had an administrator, so my vice principal, asking me, this is my first year at this elementary school, and she's like, hey, just to give you like a heads up, and since you ride bikes and everything, like, you know, every year, sometimes, you know, someone on campus will go, you know, raise a couple hundred bucks and they'll run down to Walmart and buy two bikes for the students. And I was like, oh, cool. And they're like, is that something you think you could do? And I was like, you know what? Like, yeah. And so I paired the two together. I was like, well, we're going to have these bikes we'll give away to our students, and I'll raise money through this ultra distance event. And so I kind of did like the GoFundMe route of like, hey, I'm taking on this challenge. It's 185 miles. We're going to go from this part all the way over the mountain ranges to the beach. I'm not taking a tent. I don't know. I tried to make it seem like as like, I guess you could say like, well, this is a hard thing and you should donate money. Yeah. But it was for a good cause. Yeah, yeah. It was a hard thing. I don't want to be dismissive at all. it was tough, but it was for a good cause. Yeah. And so when I'm thinking like, okay, we'll raise like $300, that first year we raised $1,500 in probably 2 weeks. So all of a sudden I was like, well, shoot, like, I'm not going to give away two bikes. I'm going to give away four bikes. And all, and we had all these, we had all this money to spend on bikes and helmets for the kids. And I was like, well, this is awesome. So another part of this was, you know, you talk about like perseverance and demonstrating to the students, like, oh, this is, it's a really good thing to push yourself. So Steve, I really appreciate when I was listening to your podcast in the past that you demonstrate that to your personal kids by doing challenging things, hard things that you're passionate about. It's a really good thing. And around the time that I did this event was probably around the time I started listening to My Back 40. And I really felt like I wasn't riding a lot at the time. I would get out on the mountain bike and do like 10-mile rides on the weekends. But one of the biggest changes that I made, and it had an even larger effect, was I decided to build up just like a single speed, simple gravel bike. And the intention was I would ride 2 days a week to work. It's a long commute, 38 miles round trip. So it got me some good miles. Now, what I didn't realize was, you know, I was like, well, this is just something I'm going to do for me. I'm riding my bike there. I go, my classroom's in the back of the school. Okay. I would kind of go through the back gate where a lot of the kids would enter, and all the kids would be playing on the playground in the morning before school starts. And every time I would get there, I would have 15, 20, 25 kids run over, rush over. Oh, Mr. Rainey, look at your bike. You rode your bike to school? I also ride my bike. Mm. Like, come check out my bike. And I remember, like, we really didn't have a lot of riders at our school, like two or three bikes in the bike rack. And I was like, man, like, it would be cool if we could get more kids riding. And so the weather started getting nicer. More kids would start riding. And then they would come talk to me. They're like, I rode my bike to school just like you. Like, come check out my bike. I just got this bike. So even though this small effect for me, which was riding twice a week to work, what I didn't realize was what effect it would have on the students, because it was leading by example. I want to set a positive example, get some exercise, and all of a sudden – there's all these kids riding to their bike to school, and they'll tell me about it. They're like, come check out my bike at the bike rack. I just got this bike. And it made me super excited to see that as a PE teacher who's trying so hard to get these kids to lead healthy, active lives. But I never realized like that small decision from me would have such a big impact on all their lives, if that makes sense.
Of course it does. It's a ripple effect, right? It's it's like, I mean, I'm sure you've heard the story. Like, I'd go away to something, and my boy would be like, did you win? And I'd laugh. No, dad didn't win, actually. But you know what? Yeah. I finished it, and that's a win.
Yeah.
Because that's all I wanted to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't care.
And I try to explain that to them. Yeah. So, and then there's some funniness with that, because I get a lot of that. Like, well, what did you win? I was like, well, I got fourth place out of like 25 or 30 riders on this event. And they were like, well, did you win anything? Did you get a trophy? And I'm like, no, I mean, it was really hard. It was cool. And they're like, so why did you do it? I was like, well, I wanted to challenge myself. And so, you know, I throw together like clips and videos. I put them on like a YouTube channel. There's nothing like, there's not a lot of effort put into it. But to them, I come back and I show them like a 5 or 10 minute clip, and it's got like no editing. I do it on my phone using like a GoPro or something. I throw it together and they're like, oh, Mr. Rainey's a YouTuber. Like, he does videos.
It's Mr. Beast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. But he's like Mr. Beast. And
the fact that I know what Mr. Beast is embarrassing.
Yeah. No, that's good. Yeah. They're like, come check this out. Yeah, I had like, I'm pretty sure I have like 50 subscribers. All of them are my students and they'll comment on it and say hi. And they always want me to upload a new video. And I, you know, I'm like, okay, I'll do it soon. And I don't do it as often as probably should, but I mean, I'll put a clip up of riding on trails and do like a 1 foot jump or something. Just my tires in the air. They're like, oh my gosh, he's the best rider ever. And so, yeah, I mean, we have extra time or it's a rainy day. They're like, look, watch the YouTube videos. We want to see you riding. I'm like, okay, we'll pull up some clips or anything. So, really into it. And they were following me along on that first trip. I sent my tracking link to all the teachers. I took Friday off. It was the day before spring break for them. So it was like, there's no teaching happening. It was like Easter egg hunts and candy eating and movie watching. And so all the teachers had my tracking link and they were following me along, sending me text messages. They were really involved in that thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, here I was, like I said, I'm going to be a high school PE teacher. I'm going to be this like tough guy and we're going to coach. And all of a sudden here I am writing and doing all this fun stuff to an entirely different population or age group. And they are just so into it. I'm like, all right, this is really cool. So, it led to a lot of, new opportunities, which I'll have to go into in a little bit, but it's like, it was just such a big perspective shift for me. I have 550 students. I get to see them year after year. They're absolutely getting stoked on riding and all these things. So, even though that was the third year of teaching for me, it was a growth moment because it led to even more things. And, I'll have to jump in. I'll have to get into those and kind of fill you in.
What I wanted to say about that too, is I think what's important about, when you're in school, everything's, and I get team building is super important. Mm-hmm. It's important that kids know how to work as a team and work together. And it's always team sports and everything's a team. And mm-hmm. for me personally, I don't know why, maybe I'm an introvert or whatever. I don't like team sports. I don't watch team sports. Mm-hmm. I'm an individual sport guy. And I think there's a lot of kids out there who suck at doing team sports, you know, like me, like I just sucked at it. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why I skateboarded and I skied and I snowboarded and ride bikes. Yeah. Like all the individual sports, it's good for kids to see that there are so many other things they can do as an outlet for their for their juice, like all the wiggles they have. It's like, well, you can just go ride your bike, or you can just put shoes on and run in the woods, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
So it's good for kids to know that, I think.
Yeah, and that's the cool thing. Like I like to joke, and I like to I always say this. It's like it's a funny way to put it. It's like, there's only one, I'm the only PE teacher at my school site. And so I always like to say, well, yeah, I'm the department chair. So, so I'm like, yeah, I'm the department chair at my school, or I'm the grade level lead. There's one of me. But the cool thing is like, I can pick, as long as I align it with, you know, our state standards for PE, I get to pick whatever activity I really want to do. And I like to mix it up. Like you said, we do our traditional team sports, like the heavy hitters, the soccer, basketball, football, things like that, because kids like them. But at the same time, in between those units, I get to put in like just off the wall jump roping, cup stacking, like we get to do these different fun things. And like we did juggling the other day. It's like, well, let's show kids how to juggle. And it's like, I never really got to do as much as that as a kid, but now, you know, I look, dig around in my classroom and I find this equipment. Or I talked to one of the previous teachers who's now in the classroom teaching third grade. She has all these things that are available for the students. So they really get a pretty big experience, a wide variety of experiences that they get to go through throughout the year. And then year to year, I can mix it up too. And that way, by the time they leave and go to middle school, you know, maybe they found something that they were interested in, or, you know, that's all you can hope for, is like, you know, that they can find an activity that helps them be active and happier. Like, you know, maybe it's yoga, maybe it's badminton. It's like, well, they found this cool thing that vibes with them. And as a result of it, you know, they'll be able to, you know, continue to do that outside of, when no one's forcing you to do it, right? Yeah. It's like, okay, you're an adult now. That's why I always, I get asked, well, I ask them like, you know, hey, there's going to be a time when you're not in school and you don't have to do PE. And it's like, what activities are you going to choose in your life that are going to help keep you happy and healthy, right? Mm. Yeah.
And what do they say?
They always laugh. They're like, oh, because it'll be like a day we have to run the mile or something. They're like, I can't wait till I don't have to do PE or anything. I'm like, well, you know, all I can hope is, you know, you find something. And they're like, oh, okay. And they're like, what happens if I don't? And I was like, it's like, well, you don't really want to get fat and unhealthy or things like that. But, you know, we can joke around with them like that. So it's like, it's like the fifth graders. It's like, we've had them for so many years. Like, well, you know, I don't want you to. Yeah, we'll joke with them like that, things like that. But, you know, we try our best to teach them healthy eating, things like that, balancing activity levels with energy intake, thing, just simple stuff like that. And it's like, you know, I say that, and it, you can go so complex into that. But if you can just scratch the surface, it does, you know, like open the door for them to think about it at least. Like, so they're not just sitting at home pounding sodas and sugar, and it's like, okay, well, you know, like I had a little bit of that, maybe I should have a little bit of this and have that little bit of balance.
So. And I think nutrition's lacking across the board, because it's like, I mean, I've talked on the podcast before about, I don't think I have the greatest relationship with food. I had a great dinner tonight though. Like, someone mentioned to me the idea of like, well, you know, I said something, oh, I don't cook as much. I love to cook and I'm a great cook, but I don't cook for myself. If I'm by myself, like I am this week, you know, I'll just graze. Right. But to prepare a meal, a nutritious, healthy meal is self-love. Right. And to teach the kids about, just energy in, energy out, you know, and, and, you know, staying away from the soda and the sugar and the candy and all that shit. And, and I don't think that's taught enough in schools. And I think we don't give kids enough credit for understanding those concepts. You know, you don't have to get all, you have to go down the rabbit hole. You know, you don't have to do that. I mean, just teaching them the value of the food or the fuel that you put in your body, you know, it's important.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're doing meaningful work, man. That's great.
Yeah. So I think about, you know, I think about that, and then I'll go on the bikepacking trip, and I'm like, all right, here comes the orange soda. Let's get the cup, orange soda.
Just don't post it.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, it's always funny. It's like, well, we have these school rules. It's like, well, we got to eat healthy, and then I'll just come in, and it'll be a day I rode to work. I'll just be like bringing this food back. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go through the back gate here. You guys don't see this.
You'll have the 7-Eleven cup of orange soda. Yeah. It's like my favorite thing. Orange soda on that trip.
Yeah, oh, I know. God. Ever since, when you were saying that, you're like the highest sugar content. You're like, no, that does sound good. I'll take that free energy. Yeah, and man, when you're in between resupplies there and you're like, oh, just give me that soda. That's the first thing I probably grab when I get there and strap it to the bike.
It's like, guilt-free, it's man. Just, it's just guilt-free sugar. It's I thought I was going to come back a diabetic, like with the amount of sugar, with the amount of high fructose corn syrup I was putting in through my body. Oh my God, my poor body.
Yeah. I remember you said you did that blood work or you did those tests. And I was like, oh,
how have you been eating?
I can do it too. Yeah.
Oh, well, last month I ate out of gas stations actually. So that's probably why my blood work has been out of whack.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So,
how does this lead into your philanthropy? So you raised what, $1,000? Now, is this something we're going to be doing every year to like give back?
Yeah, that's what I kind of thought. And I was like, oh, I know. It's funny. I worked in a bike shop and running shops and things like that. But I'm just not a salesman. Like, I'm not like, well, you know, like, here's what you get. Like, or anytime I had to like sell a bike or anything, I was just like, well, it's a super cool bike. Like, look at all these things you could do with it. But I never was like a hard push salesman. So I never really liked asking people for money. I wasn't. But we did do another fundraiser not too long ago, coinciding with this year's 2024 thing. We did raise another $1,000. So we're total, I think I raised $2,500 for the elementary school. And this year will be the 11th bike I've given away. So that's awesome. Yeah, which it does help keep them excited. But, you know, like, this is why I'd say, like, I would say my biggest accomplishment from teaching was about 2 years ago, I was in this teacher support class, and they want you to take on this big project. They're like, okay, do something big for your school, work with your mentor teacher. I, okay, cool. And it, even though it kind of got bigger way over my head, I created this grant proposal, and I wanted to get this program. When I got moved down from the middle school down to the elementary level, I had been following this program called allkidsbike.org. So it's an organization. And do you know what a Strider bike is, or a balance bike?
Yep.
Yeah. So they work with the Strider bike company. And what they do is they created this special type of bike you could learn on. Nothing. And really, it is just a balance bike. But they have right by like the kickstand mounting plate, they have this part where you can it has a basically detachable pedals. So when they send these to the school, and they're nationwide, they're in all 50 states now, there's over 1,000 schools are using these. They send them as a balance bike, and you start teaching these, you start teaching your students how to ride on balance bikes, and it's kindergarten age 5 focused. I proposed it to our superintendent and our vice superintendent, and within like 2 or 3 minutes, they're like, this is great, let's get a whole set. And I was like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. So it was just a big idea. And I was like, okay, like, you know, like, this is cool. We could get to do this. And I was like, oh shoot, I'm the one that's going to teach it. But I was excited about it. It was just like, you know, another thing like, okay, here's going to be, this is my next challenge. It took them about 2 years. I remember they had actually visited my classroom. They're like, hey, we're not going to do it this year. We're sorry to disappoint you. But you know, you got to clear it through insurance. You got to get all these certain things. It's like, okay, yeah, there's a big legal side of it too, because there's risk involved. But this year, after 2 years, this spring, the bike's actually shipped in, and we were able to kick off our program. So we had a big bike buildup party. All of Grizzly Cycles, all of our friends came out. The superintendent's on the ground of this district. He's building the racks. We got tatted up mechanics all over, and just like, it was great. It was like, I got the superintendent working with the bike mechanic. They're building everything up, and everyone was coming together for this cause. And it was to get more kids on bikes, to teach them in how to ride at school, when many of them share with me, hey, I don't know how to ride a bike, or I can't ride without my training wheels, or they just simply don't have a bike. So that's where it feels like what I'm doing, or what we, I would say we, because it, you know, I'm just one person, but it really is a community effort. What we're doing, it's so impactful for the community and the lives we touch. So I would say about right, I know I'm gonna run my class. I'm gonna do about 2 hours, two sessions of it tomorrow. We're at about 70 kids so far, and we just started. Yeah, so 70 kids impacted. And then I'm actually about to start to put the pedals on again. So this summer, which is like this is the best thing, is going to be my first summer actually doing a full teaching of summer school. And we're going to have about 120 students, and we're going to service the whole town. So it's not just my school, which is something I always said, like, we try to be equitable. We try to have fair opportunities. I'm going to go from school to school with this program. The bikes will travel with me. I'll spend 2 weeks at one school, get them through the program, teach the skills, bolt the pedals on. And then I'll go over to the next school and we'll be doing it. And I just, it's such a simple program. And all the kids come up to me and they're like, I can't do it, where the training wheels, you don't even have brakes. They just use your feet as brakes. Yeah. And they have all these barriers that they're like, oh, I'm scared. And then they get on the bikes and it's like, oh, this is really fun. I'm like, yeah, bikes should be fun. It's fun stuff. We're going to play games on the bikes, and they don't even realize it, but they're progressing. They're learning balance, spatial awareness. They're learning bike safety. They're learning all these things, and it's just chalked up to as like a game. And I can throw all these little things in a way. There's a term in teaching called like, it probably has different names, called like hidden curriculum. All the things that you teach outside of like the curriculum on paper, like life skills, like perseverance, like I said, like challenging yourself, like we're gonna put the pedals on today. We're going to do all the games we did again. They're like, oh, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm like, you guys, you just did 5 other days. Like, you're ready. Like, let's do this. Yeah. And they get excited because they look at you and they want to, they're like looking at you as a guide. And, you know, like, I'll have a kid like whip around a corner and just wipe out hard, and they just get up and they're looking at you.
I'm like, I know the reaction. Either, eh? Yeah. Am I going to cry?
I'm like, and I love this because I've been doing this for a while with the kindergartner. It's just like, dude, you're so tough. Like, you bounce right up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I go up to them and I'm like, dude, you're super tough. Like, show me your hands. Yeah, you're good, man. Yeah. And I say, well, do you want to take a break right now, or do you want to keep riding? They're like, I'm going to keep riding. I was like, and give them a fist bump. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, for some kids, they're just bawling their eyes out. But for most of them, they're like, oh, I'm going to keep riding. And they're good. And they're looking at you. And if you have this reaction, and this is great as a PE teacher, if you're like, oh my gosh, we got to call. Hey, I got a kid down. Yeah. You know, they're going to feed off the energy. Yeah. And so, you know, doing it for a couple of years, like, you just kind of, you get that now. And I'm sure it's the same being a dad, you know, they feed off the energy and, in a way.
Yeah, I was just reading. Well, I'm listening to a book. I think I mentioned this book a couple times. It's amazing. A Gabor Maté book. Gabor Maté is a psychologist out of the University of British Columbia. He's like a Hungarian guy. But it's an amazing book. It's called Scattered Minds, about ADD in children and adults. It's been a fascinating book. But one of the things you mentioned in there was the idea of how the kids absorb energy. And so even as an infant, he talked about it as the there's 9 months of gestation, and there's an equivalent 9 months outside of the body gestation, because the kid needs to transfer from being inside in that safe space to being on the outside of this space and still having that emotional connection with someone. Right. And he talks a lot about that. It's like, you know, when things go awry, and they do, and sometimes parents lose it, you know, if you can keep it under control and approach it in a more calm way, then the kids don't get as anxious about that.
Yeah.
So like when, you know, the story I've told about Jasper before is he had an epic crash off of his run bike. So I had got him a bike and taken the pedals off because it was going to be an upgrade, right? Put the pedals back on. And he crashed so hard, but that shaped him. He started riding just last spring as a 10-year-old, right? 10? The years mixed up. But my experience there was, you know, I got him on the bike. It was so important to me. It was a life skill thing. It was a confidence building thing, right? And he went, he was just riding out the back of the apartment here, and he went through this puddle, and it was in the early spring, so there's a bit of snow and a bit of ice, not too gnarly though. And he went through this puddle, and I was like, oh, it's full of ice. It's water on top and full of ice, right? And he went down in the puddle, splash, and he got up, and he was so pissed. And I went over to him, and I said, oh, buddy, I gave him a hug, and I said, okay, you're wet. You should go in and get changed because you're going to get cold, but you need to do something for me, Jasper. And he's like, what? And I'm like, I need you to get back on your bike, and I need you to ride it back to the apartment. He was like, no, I don't want that bike. And he threw it down. It's like, dude, trust me. I need you to get on the bike and super calm and just ride it back to the apartment. Put it away. You don't have to ride anymore today. Change your clothes and come back out. Bring your drone. We'll fly your little drone around or whatever. And then hours later, he was like, I'm going to go ride my bike outside again. And it's like, yeah, you are. Yeah. you know, and it was just, awesome. It was such a success because, you know, all his buddies rode bikes, and I know that he's just been shaped. He experienced maybe for him as a child, a big T trauma, because it was a big crash and he pancaked going pretty fast on the pavement. And so it shaped him. It changed the trajectory of his life with bikes. Right.
Yeah.
So for me to get him back on that bike after he crashed in icy cold water in the winter, you know, it's just like what you said about, yeah, nice crash, buddy. High five. No cuts. Right on. You're good. Go, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's how you approach it. Yeah. And if you freak out, oh my God, and get the bandages and call 911, it's like the kid's going to be like, is it really that bad? Like, it doesn't feel bad, but it's really that bad, you know? Like,
yeah.
They don't know. They're just going to feed off of what you. So kudos to you, man. It took me 50 years to learn that. And you're 27 years old and you know how to do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was lots of experiences. And having a helper, my aide, who's been doing it. On paper, she is my aide. She doesn't have the credentials that I have, but anytime I get a new kid come in, I always say, hey, you know, this is my name. I'm one of your PE teachers. Like, and hey, look, that's Miss Lana. She's your other PE teacher. Cause she will do just as much as I do, even if she doesn't, you know, get the pay or the, you know, respect. But I'm like, I just introduce her. She is the other PE teacher. We are your PE teachers. And I hope that, you know, like they carry that and have that same respect that, you know, they have with me, with her as well. Cause I can rely, if I'm gone on an event, she runs class. I mean, she'll tell the principal like, oh yeah, we don't need a sub. I got it. I'm like, yep.
Yeah. What so you I said,
my sub plans,
what you said about too, like the aide, I hope the aides get respect. That's a, that's a really important job.
Yeah.
You can't do it all on your own. And sometimes, you know, it's good to have someone have a woman in there with you who might see things differently than you or approach things in a different way. You know, you need backup, you need a wingman, wingwoman in there, you know? I think the teaching assistant or teaching aide, and oftentimes too, they're like, there's so many kids now. I mean, I think there always were kids like this on the spectrum of, like, we were just talking ADD and on the autism spectrum, there's so many kids with neurodivergency, you know, that you need as many eyes on it as possible, that you're funded and it's in the school system. Right. So it's all has to be funded. All has to be paid for. So you're lucky you have an aide probably.
Yeah, I know. I know. And it's a tough time in California state of education right now. There was a massive, massive deficit. And I'm not one to get into politics or anything, but there was definitely some, it's sad because when there's deficits, there's always cuts, there's cuts to everything and education's on that. So we're losing a lot of teachers this year and I barely made the cut. And it was like, pretty much like my master's degree saved me and some other things. I have some graduate units in coaching as well. And it kind of came down to all the other extra things I do in the district, like the bike program and, you know, for the first time ever, actually the first show I was eligible, the teachers at my school, so I got voted teacher of the year, which was a huge shock to me. I was like, I couldn't even really believe it at the time. Cause it made me step back to go take a moment to breathe. I was like, whoa, this has been an outstanding, like standout year with all the things that I've been able to put on or facilitate. And it does now. I'm like, well, okay, yeah, that does make sense. Like, because I just have my head down and I'm just like full speed ahead. We're gonna do all these things and we got this coming up. Like, I have a whole track and field day. I'm calling the Olympics for our school coming up on Friday. So I've been working on that. But it's just like, it's nice to receive that recognition. It makes you feel really good because, you know, you don't even think about it. Cause to me, it's just like, this is like the service that I can provide. I try to be an outstanding advocate for these students and I put on these events to hype them up on bikes, all these things. So for that to come back around and be recognized was just like a really nice moment.
You know what, dude, you're having an impact on these kids because it's gone through my mind a couple times. The brain is such a funny thing, but you're talking to me about how you're an advocate for your kids and how the kids seem to like flock to you and you're riding your bike. There was a dude, I can't remember what, or a teacher, I can't remember what grade I would have been in, Mr. Clark, but wasn't the phys ed teacher, but he had such an impact. And I remember him. I remember his face to this day, you know, just because he was an impactful, positive. I remember his smile. I remember his encouragement, in music and like work, like he was an athletic dude. So he's just always pushing the idea of, you know, being active and doing follow your talent. Like, Steve, you should be a football player. It's like, I don't want to be a football player. I want to go skateboard with my buddies. That's what I'm going to do right now. It's like, well, good. As long as you're doing something, right? But yeah. you're having that same impact. Like I can imagine these kids growing up and thinking about, you know, Mr. Rainey, that crazy guy I used to ride his bike to school.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, you're having a really positive influence on them. So good for you and congratulations. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you deserve Teacher of the Year. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been good.
And validating,
I know,
too, right? Validating that you're on the right track, right? And the school's recognizing that. That's great.
There's a big make it or break it year, and that's typically year three. So if you, I'm going to consider myself, I might make it. I honestly started very young. I was subbing young. I started teaching on my 23rd birthday.
Wow.
And so there's a good chance I'm going to get to 40 years, and I would be absolutely happy to do that as long as my body's holding up in shape. And, you know, I'm hoping the way I'm treating myself that it will be, you know, I feel like I am in pretty good shape with the things I do. I'm hopefully going to get 40 years. That's a milestone for me I'm aiming for. And, you know, maybe you make it there, you know, things change and I'm done. I'm going to go ride now.
I didn't have, you know? I didn't have any goals when I was 27. I can't even.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
No. Snowboarding. I was like, how many runs can I do at Whistler this year?
Yeah.
That was my goal. No long-term goals. Oh my gosh. Oh, if I knew then what I know now.
Oh yeah.
So what's next for you? Are you going to carry this thing on like year after year as much as you can?
Yeah. It's like when you buy the program, they say you're supported for 10 years. Okay. If you need something, they send it to you. They're super responsive. I want to continue it. And I know I got nervous with the budget cuts and everything. I said, I'm not going to have a job. That could change. Like it could be that I do need to go to the high school level, because if they get rid of elementary PE is not a guaranteed position in teaching. It's almost like a supplementary position. If the money's there, we'll do it. So I hope to continue that as much as I can. I don't want to bombard people too much with fundraising, but I do like to have that end of year bike giveaway. That's going to come up. The other thing I've kind of been jumping into, aside from education and more back to the bike packing, was I ended up finding myself as an organizer for our Padres event. You know, after we operate the event as a collective, which is great, because it's like one person doing the whole thing. Like you think about John Schilling on the AZT. I know there's probably many trail stewards on AZT or Jefe Branham on Colorado Trail. It's like, you know, being that one person putting on such a massive event, oh my gosh, like all this work that's involved. I never really thought of it. You know, I was just a participant and I never really thought about all the emails to answer and organizing event. And all of a sudden I found myself in that seat. So Tour de los Padres can be abbreviated as TDLP. This collective, when they kind of found out what I had done with the fundraising for my school, I was invited to be a part of it to help out. Also, geographically, I'm located on part of the route where I can scout out sections that would be harder for those that live a couple hours away to get to. So got invited to collective, started organizing it. And then I decided, I'll take on the shorter course, the tour route, the one I had done in 2022. And so this year, in some almost last minute, we were offering a longer, about 280-mile course. We found out pretty much a couple days or a week, there was road closures on a route that we couldn't legally offer the event, right? We didn't want to put ourselves in a position that would jeopardize the future of the event. So instead of having the two offerings, a longer route and the shorter route, every single person then started coming to my version, the shorter tour route. And oh man, I was all these emails, all these questions to answer. And I think the week before there was 10 people, 15 people signed up. And all of a sudden there was we had about 30 plus people on that start line 2 weeks ago was when we took place. And it was oh, shoot, here we go. So, you know, you're doing your pre-ride speech. I'm handing out trackers. I'm trying to answer questions. And I was like, okay, oh shoot, hey, we gotta go. Like, let's go. Like, we gotta ride. Right. The cool part was, instead of just being Steven and I, my buddy, the one who did it with me in 2022, he was also on the ride. But I managed to convince about 10 friends to do it with me. And so we had our Grizzly Cycles contingent, all of our bikepacking friends, really rounded up the crew this year. They joined me. And so we had all these people on route. The only hard part was, and to everyone, I was hyping up like, hey, we got this great descent. You're going to descend like 5,000 feet or like 1500 meters at the end. You're going to go from the mountain down to straight down to the beach. It's going to be great. Which it was pretty fun. It was just so much more challenging than anyone else could have thought. I mean, it was like we were riding this ridge line, and even on the ride with GPS file, it said like Monte Arito Trail, prepare to hike your bike. And the GPX just went, and I was like, oh God. And yeah, I mean, there's like all this, we did our best to stay together in that group of 10. I mean, everyone else, you know, you got your racers, you got your tourers, everyone. Yeah. It was great to meet all these people. But I remember our poor group, I was like, it's going to be great. Like, we did it in 2 days last year. We're going to do it in 3 this year. We'll be chilling. Like, but, you know, people bring heavy setups, fitness levels are over the place. The part that I didn't really realize was like, okay, well, due to storm damage from the previous year, it shut the forest down, like, completely. They didn't want anyone in this backcountry spot. They were ticketing people. Oh. It made us go a different way, which they had planned, like, okay, we're going to go to this town now. We're going to continue in this backcountry trail this way. But it just was a lot more difficult. And I was like, shoot, like, there's 30 people out here. And I'm thinking, like, you know, I'm a little bit more experienced rider with, you know, racing and ultras and stuff, but I'm like, oh shoot, I just put all these people on this event, and it's
something to consider. Yeah. I know in Canada, that whole idea of being a quote unquote organizer and accepting liability for people who are out there. I mean, that's a thing. And I know the States is a bit more of a judiciary state, I would say, than Canada. Although it would never occur to me to like get hurt in a bikepacking race and go to the organizer. But it's something to consider. And a lot of organizers are very tentative about claiming they are such.
And with it being so challenging as it was, Steve, there was actually, there was someone, he wasn't quite on the route yet. He was trying to make his way to the route. But someone did actually take a helicopter ride out, which we saw clips of. So there was a search and rescue involved, which I don't know how many times it's happened throughout this is the 11th year. It was like, it made us talk. It was a talking point. Like, is this something we're going to have to be invite only, or is this something we continue to publish? Because right now it's like, it's on bikepacking.com. I did a short write up for bikepacking.com with Miles Arbor. And some pictures and stuff, but it brought up that question because, you know, I didn't even think about it. I when I had finished, you know, my face was known. I wasn't secretive about it. I was like, hey, I'm the organizer. Here's some things you want to know. Here's where you can filter water. There's no resupply from this point to this point, so stock up. And I remember on the final hike of bike on day 3, right when it hit that steep part, there was like almost not a traffic jam, but there was a good amount of people like at this really difficult section. And I was walking by, Steve and I were just pushing at this point. We had to leave our group behind, had to be at work on Monday. And I remember a couple people were like, hey, aren't you the organizer? I was like, yeah. and I was like, yeah, it's really tough. And is it? And they're like, yeah. And then I would say, like, well, is this your first time out on Padres or Tour de los Padres? They're like, yeah, it's our first one. It was tougher than I thought. And I made this comment, and I was probably delirious, but I was like, oh, that's cool. No refunds. And I was like, why did I say that? And it's a free event. I mean, barely anyone paid anything, but it was funny. I thought it would be like,
did he laugh? Like
lighten the mood.
Did he laugh?
Yeah. I mean,
oh, good.
Yeah. Other people were like, oh, yeah. And I mean, we were pouring sweat. It was one of those sections where you push like 10 steps and then you stop. It was just that steep. And And I'm just thinking, and my wife was, I was like, 7:30 PM finish. We're going to cruise in at sunset. We got this. And, she was eating dinner with the other partners of the riders that were much further behind me. And I remember at some point I pinged off a Garmin InReach message. I shot it off to her and I said, "Hey, this is going to be a while." And I said, "Let the other girlfriends and wives know, like, they're not going to make it tonight. I
just they're not going to make it.
Like, they're camping a fourth night, and like, they need to be aware so they can make plans, because it wasn't a loop. This is a point to point,
right?
Mostly downhill route, but yeah, it was a tough one. And I'm rocking my shirt. I know, you know, we're a podcast, but it's
okay.
ATV. My friend makes them at the shop, Kevin, the owner, all terrain bicycle. I had a rig built up. I had my Surly Krampus built up single speed.
Yeah.
And no suspension, even though everyone was like, "Yeah, you should use suspension for this." Man. So I went the rigid route, and previously, I was hyped up about single speed. I had done a little bit in a couple months ago, but I hadn't single speed in a couple months too. So it's like, I remember telling my friends, I was like, "Okay, gear, do I take the carbon? I have a cutthroat, Salsa cutthroat, two bikes. I have carbon cutthroat, 20 pounds, super lightweight.
No, man, take the 30 pound single speed."
Yeah, exactly. Take the steel single speed, or do I send it on this one? And I remember, I went back and forth. People probably got annoyed. My friends, I was like, "I can't decide." So I just said, "All right, I'm going to do one ride the night before, like the Wednesday before leaving on Friday." I probably did like 800 feet of climbing. And I was like, "All right, well, I don't feel trash." I did loaded ride. Yeah. And I was like, "I'm sending it." And so I went from pretty much no single speed training, and really I hadn't been training a lot either. I mean, I was doing like one ride a week, to taking on 18,000 feet of climbing on the single speed. Nice. So I did pick a 32 by 22. So a big little climbing cog in the back.
Yeah.
And it worked out. Yeah. And I said, like,
sucks on the flats though, hey?
I just was like 130 cadence. I would just, I ran giant tires, 29 by 2.8, these big Caravelle Coronados, and that nice cushion.
Oh, yeah.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
I didn't really miss suspension, but everyone's like, "Oh, I was, to my knowledge, I was the only single speeder." So I did tell my students that I won, because I was, I won the single speed category. Yeah. Nice. But everyone was like, "Oh, you're crazy for single speeding." I said, like, "Look, I'm riding, we're all walking the steep stuff.
Exactly.
We're all going to walk the steep stuff, and I can climb out of the saddle. I like being out of the saddle." Yeah. So it was fun. I'm planning on doing a lot more single speeding if I can, but you know, I remember you said this at one point on the divide, your first time, you probably should run gears. So I got the cutthroat for that.
Don't listen to me. Don't listen to me. People are out there riding at single speed and doing it way faster than I did it. So it has nothing to do with like, I didn't do it fast, but but I've done single speed. Like I've raced raced some and, did a bikepacking trip and a bikepacking race single speed, and I didn't find it really that much different, other than you're standing a lot more you're keeping up with the crew, and like you're not really going, it's not slow, you know, like especially if you're in the right ratio, oftentimes you'll out climb people with gears because you have to stand right.
Yeah. And I was
third or second speed. That's second speed. Standing, sit, stand,
walk. Yeah. Sit, stand, walk. Yeah. I could not stop cracking the jokes. I'll have to send you a picture of my rig, because on it we have this sponsor called and he's like one of the, he's like an Instagram, I don't know if you could say like an icon, but he puts out shirts, like they make shirts like this, like all terrain bicycle. It would be hard to say it's a lifestyle brand, but he rides a single speed everywhere, and he'll put out stickers. So he had a sticker pack I got sent, and it says, "Rigid bikes are fine," right next to my Fatty's Fit Fine sticker on the Surly. And then the other one I put right by my cog, it says, "Single speed is better." And so I just had that there. And so I would like have my bike in the snow and just take a picture. I'm like, I could not stop cracking jokes to our friends. So I was like, they would say like, oh, like, oh man, I really wish I had an extra gear right now. And we're climbing in their granny gears. I'm like, yeah, me too, man. And I just could not stop cracking. It was just so fun to me.
Yeah.
And, yeah,
it's fun. And it's, there's something endearing about the simplicity of a bike like that. You know, you don't really have to worry about much, yeah. You know, yeah. You don't have to worry about when you shift. Yeah. And it's funny too, how you get used to the flow of the bike, like your mm-hmm. physical speed and when you can engage your pedals, you kind yeah. of, so you're not wasting a lot of energy. And, I don't know. I went for a little bit of a ride on my single speed today, but my brakes didn't nice. Work.
Yeah.
And I found out before my brakes, I have these old, well, the whole bike's old. It's like a 2012 Chromag Surface 29er. It's uh-huh. like the first generation Chromag Surface. And yeah. it's got, I think it's got that generation, like Avid XO brakes. They don't owe me anything. Mm-hmm. And they're just acting yeah. up, and I bled them and they felt good on the patio. But then I took them for a ride and it was like, uh-oh, got a little yeah. descent. I'm like, whoa, I can't, I got to go back. Yeah. No brakes. Oh, yeah. No brakes. Yeah,
that sucks.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. But, I think I'm going to wrap this up, buddy.
Yeah.
So tell me more, Drew, about, so when can people learn more about, so you mentioned allkidsbike.org.
Yeah.
Now, is that a place that people could go and donate to there if they wanted to contribute?
Yeah. I mean, that would be like a general fund. We've exceeded all of our fundraising. Like personally, I'm set for the next 2 years at my right. school. But if that's something that they want basically donate to, allkidsbike.org, they have a general fund. The general fund, basically, when you were signing up for, if you were a school, you could, luckily our district just paid the price outright. We had some funding through a certain window. They purchased it. It was a $9,000 program, but 10 years of support. I mean, that's like yeah. $900 a year for 200 kids learning how to ride a year. Yeah. It's like, that's a good deal right there.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to donate to the general fund, you can pop onto their website and they have a link. It's probably pretty accessible right when you pop on there. And that can, I think they say like $10 teaches one kid to ride. They have some slogans there.
Yeah.
So it's a great program. You don't even need to be a PE teacher to do it. You could just be someone that's passionate. So, yeah. Awesome. Yeah, check that out if you're interested.
And then where can people learn more about you? Where do they find you?
Yeah, if they're interested in doing Torilos Padres or anything like that, we have if you just Google Tour de los Padres, if you're anywhere in the California or closer area, highly recommend doing that route. I can be found, let's see, what am I calling right now? Rainy Days. I'll have to open my account up again. Yeah. So my name on Instagram, I'll post different stuff. I have a lot of my ride stuff. Rainy, R-A-N-E-Y, Days with two S's. So it's D-A-Y-S-S. So my last name, a little play on my name there. So I'll get some posts about different things. You can see some of my bike program things there as well.
Right on, man. Hey, and you know what? It was cool that you reached out to recommend yourself as a guest. I dig that because you're doing meaningful work and I think it's really cool. Mm-hmm. And just keep at it. That's all I can do. And maybe we'll have another podcast in 40 years when you retire as a phys ed teacher and how many kids you would have gotten on bikes by then.
I know.
Right.
Yeah. I'm keeping track of that. That's a good bragging number.
Yeah, man.
All right, Steve, I appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Drew. And thanks for, you said you've been listening for a while. I appreciate that as well. Mm-hmm. So thanks for tuning in and letting me bug you every week or two.
Yeah. 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 Hopefully can continue that. And I'm looking forward to, I think, I need to catch up on the audiobook. I want to start this thing. Cause I've been, that one, I know it's a big project for you, but.
Yeah, I just did a chapter today. Yeah, it's good. I did a chapter today and I'm probably going to do another chapter later. It's just, it's time mm-hmm. consuming. Like this last chapter, I think it was 8 minutes edited and it takes like probably about an hour and a half. I can't get through a sentence without fumbling over my words. I'm a marble mouth. So I'm like, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Oh, I got to go back and then cut it in and recut it in and cut it in again and cut it in again. No, I really enjoy the process, but you know, that's the thing, like what you've done, you found, work in your life that's meaningful. Right. And it gives you, it lights you up. Right. And like this, yeah. Like just for me, like the podcast and the book and the community and the people like you who are out there doing their thing and promoting bikes for everyone. It's great. So I appreciate your time and what you do. Cool, all man. Right.
I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Talk soon. Bye. I want to thank Drew again for his time and thank all of you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Kids on bikes, you know, like, I think I've told this story before, but I really struggled to get, my son on a bike, and I don't think he's going to mind me talking about it because I'm so proud of him now. I mean, what happened is he had a really bad crash and it took him forever to get back on. In fact, last spring, not this past spring, but like not spring now, but like last spring, he started riding a bike with a bit of encouragement because he just had this really bad crash and he wrecked himself. And I just think that riding bikes is, it's a life skill, really. It teaches us so much. It's not only hand-eye coordination and athleticism and just awesome transportation, environmentally friendly transportation, and teaches kids, you know, balance and following the rules of the road and spatial awareness and, you know, by riding a bike is super important. So one story I remember, he was learning and it was early spring, so it was snowy and icy. And he was riding through this quite large puddle. And I was like, oh my God, it's going to be like glare ice on the bottom. And sure enough, he took a whipper and fell in the water and he was pissed. He was so pissed. And I ran over to Jasper and I said, buddy, are you okay? And you're wet, hey? I think you should go change your clothes. I said, I need you to do something for me. And he's like, what? He was super pissed. I was like, I need you to get on your bike and I need you to ride it back to the apartment. No, I'm not going to ride that. Blah, blah, blah. He did not want to ride that bike. And I didn't get mad. I was just like, Jasper, I really, really need you to get on the bike and ride it back to the apartment and put it away and then go and get in the bathtub, right? Warm up. But I need you to ride your bike back. And he rode it back. And then he had a shower or whatever. He warmed up. And later, he asked if he'd go riding again. It was either later that day or the next day. He asked to go riding again. And I think what happened in that moment is he gained confidence. He had so much confidence. I was going to say mastery, but you know, he didn't master that, right? Like in those moments, he wasn't obviously a master. He was just learning how to ride a bike, but he did it and he fell and he got back on the fucking horse. And that's what I wanted to instill in him, is that sometimes things don't go our way. And the only way to overcome that is to do it again and face that fear. We've felt it. I mean, I don't do this kind of riding anymore, but you know, I kind of learned to mountain bike in Whistler and Squamish, BC. It's pretty gnarly, like roots, wet, steep, steep climbing, steep descents, slabs, roots, moss. Like it's hard. And the number of times that I crashed, the number of times I would get to the top of something that I crashed really hard on and to overcome the fear and drop into that thing again. I'm not saying I'm a fucking hero. We all do it. But that's just part of, it's not only part of learning how to ride a bike and learning how to tackle terrain. It's just a part of life. And sometimes life isn't always awesome. Sometimes life's really fucking sucks. And you're going to be okay. Jasper was going to be okay. He's okay. He got back on the bike. He rode it. And now he's reluctant because, you know, he sees me riding distances and, you know, I'm a good biker. I've gone to Alaska riding and, you know, I've competed and raced and I'm just completely recreational. And he'll ask me, he's like, did you win? Like, you rode down the divide. Did you win? It's like, no, buddy, I didn't win. Far from winning. So far from winning. But I still won because I finished it. I finished what I started. And I think that's so important. These small lessons, just like, you know, the kids are getting into an activity and they're like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it this week. Okay, maybe we'll take this week off. I get it. Had a hard day at school, kind of feeling rough, whatever. But you need to finish it. You need to keep going to classes until the end of this activity. And if you don't like it, don't do it again. But you need to finish what you started. And that's something I'm trying to instill in them. But anyway, I don't want to go on. This is a long outro. I don't usually talk that much on my outro, but it just, kids on bikes is super important to me. And when I see kids riding bikes, gangs of kids riding bikes, that's what we used to do, right? We used to, like, you know, we'd go out in the morning in the summer holidays. We wouldn't come back till the streetlights come on. And what would you do? Well, ride bike or skateboard, but we'd be out doing something as a group. And there's something to that. There's something magical in getting out there and riding bikes with your friends. Something really special about it. And I think that's what keeps you young, right? It's just that constant desire to go out and play, right? And adults tend to lose that. And we see it all around us. You know, I look in the corner of my living room right now and I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bikes, and my closet has like 3 frames in it, a bunch of parts. Like, bikes have been a part of my life for a long, I have fancy bikes. I have like handmade, you know, Cro-Mags, got my Rollingdale. Like, I don't have like fancy dual squish, blah, blah bikes. I can't afford that stuff, but I have really good quality bikes, and bikes are kind of a forever thing for me. And the reason they're in my living room, because there's no way they're going to spend the night outside, because around here they'll probably disappear. I'm not going to have that. But bikes have always been such a huge part of my life. And it's been the one constant in my life of all the change, career change, moving, partners, girlfriends, all of that. Bikes are always there. Bikes were always there. And I don't know what that says about how important the activity is to people. I mean, you see all the memes online, right? It's like, you know, people just can't stop buying bikes. If I had a garage, it'd probably be full of bikes right now. But anyway, super pumped what Drew's doing out there, getting kids on bikes. And as an educator, I think he's in a great position to be able to do that. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Anyway, that's all I've got. My outro was so long. I got to stop right now. So lots of exciting things happening. Tour Divide starting, books coming out. Don't forget to support Dynamic Cyclist. MB40 is going to save you 25%. I know it's late and no one's probably even listening this far in. But if you are, a great way to support the podcast is to support the supporters. And Dynamic Cyclist has been one of my biggest supporters. And don't forget Ryan Draper at Cycling 101. MB40 is going to save you 50% off your first month of coaching. And MB40 at Redshift Sports is going to save you 15% on suspension products. So go and check them out. And until next week, keep the rubber side down.